Welcome to the Unscripted SEO Interview Podcast. Yes, it's 100% unscripted, 100% unrehearsed, 100% unedited, and 100% real. I'm your host, Mark A. Preston. Today, joining us, we have local SEO specialist, Joy Hawkins, who is the owner of Sterling Sky. Hi, Joy.
Hi, thanks for having me.
Well, just for those people watching this who are not aware who you are, can you just give a bit of a background of who you are and how you entered into the industry?
Sure. I actually started in the industry in 2006, actually selling Google ads. It was a long time ago, and slowly morphed into SEO and kind of self-taught myself and decided that I liked local SEO because all my clients at the time were insurance agents, and they were kind of fascinated on, you know, how to get ranked in the local pack results. And we called it Google Places at the time. So I kind of, that's what started my desire to learn more. And I joined Google's volunteer program in 2012. So they call it the product experts, but we're basically a set of volunteers that help moderate the online forums that Google has. So I'm part of the Google Business Profile community. So I talk a lot about things pertaining to Google Business Profiles, but also anything to do with local SEO.
Okay, great. And what type of businesses do you work with generally?
Yeah, so I'd say our biggest, we have a lot of lawyers, realtors, home services, so things like plumbers, HVAC, lawn care, stuff like that. And then we also have a few in like the healthcare space. So things like chiropractors or podiatrists and stuff like that.
Okay. So over the years, how have you seen the local SEO space change?
I think it's getting harder for sure. I think the gap between the different types of local SEO companies is greater than it used to be. So there's, you know, the set of people that you can kind of hire off Fiverr who will say that they can do local SEO, and they generally do things like post fake reviews or, you know, do geotagging of photos, which doesn't really do anything. So there's a large sector of our industry, I feel like, that's kind of like used car salesmen, you know, and that's unfortunate. Like, they kind of give us a bad rep. So I think definitely that gap has widened a bit over the last decade or so.
Yeah, because I'm going to say some businesses you speak to don't understand the value of local SEO as an entity. They just say, well, you know, why should I pay all this money for local SEO?
I think that's something that a lot of agencies face, not something we face, though, mainly because most of our clients, like, they know who we are. They've heard about us because they've heard me speak somewhere or seen a, you know, an article that we've written or some type of educational piece that we put out there. So usually they're already sold on why they need it, and then they're searching out for a company. But I definitely hear that feedback a lot from other agency owners that are like cold calling, like, you know, actually going and pitching their services. I think that there is still a set of businesses out there that don't quite grasp the value yet.
Right. So when the foundations are set and the business profile has been filled in, like, what sort of things do you do on a monthly basis to help the businesses generate more leads?
Mm-hmm. Very little actually has to do with the profile itself. Like you said, like, other than like Google posts, which obviously are like an ongoing thing, there's very little that's ongoing outside of that. And maybe like review management, like, you know, responding to reviews and stuff. Most of what we do is actually on the website. So things like adding content, tweaking existing content, obviously link building, but more traditional SEO stuff, that's really what moves not just organic ranking, but also ranking in the local pack results. So the majority of our time is spent on that.
Right. I was a couple of weeks back, I was looking at a business that's local and looking at the stats of the website, and the SEO company that was working with them went down the blogging route. The problem that I found is only 3.2% was from the target geographical area. Like when it comes to blogging for local SEO, how can you make sure that those blogs are orientated around the geographical area so they're driving the right people that's going to turn into new business?
Yeah, that's tough. Blogging, I would say, is probably not a strategy you'd want to do then. Like we work with a lot of multi-location businesses, so they want that, you know, statewide or national-wide coverage. And on a state level, it's really easy to do from a blogging perspective, because like for lawyers, for example, there's a lot of different state laws and things like that. So a lot of the search terms we're going after are specific to a state. So like Massachusetts or like Florida or whatever. So that's easy on that part. I think if it's like, you know, a local plumber, for example, and they write, you know, an article on how to fix your toilet, there really isn't a good way to keep Google from showing that nationwide. We actually tried this recently with a client and like localized the entire page, put their city all over it, you know, making it very obvious that it is like locally driven. And actually Google did take it out of the search results nationwide for a time period, like a few weeks, and then put it back in and just like removed all the city names that we put in the title and stuff. So like they don't show up in the search results bolded or anything, but they're still there. So I think like it is tricky, and blogging probably isn't necessarily the route I would go if you're the local plumber serving one town.
So if you are a local plumber or a local florist where say the intent is to get people to walk through your front door in your local town, what kind of things should SEOs and people be doing on the website itself?
Yeah, so like to give an example, we have an electrician client that I work on, and like, you know, there's only so many ways. You can't just create a whole bunch of content around the word electrician, although that is the main thing that people search. There's a lot of other terms that people will type in, like, that I wouldn't even have thought of, you know, things around electrical wiring or data cabling, or I'm trying to think of some of the other ones, like TV wires or installing TVs, installing, you know, sound systems, fixing outdoor lights, stuff like that. Like there's all these different things that electricians would do that do get local searches. Like some of them are like near me, like install a chandelier near me, stuff like that actually gets search volume. So although I wouldn't put it in a blog format, like adding more detailed service pages, I think is a really good way to target some of those types of clients, along with service area pages usually perform well as well.
Right. So for these service area pages, do you need to specifically include like the town or city name or the words near me, or will Google just understand that, say, like that electrician, he's located in that area, so that's where we'll rank him?
No, you absolutely have to put in the city. And we've also found that like literally adding the words near me help you rank better for near me queries. So that's another important thing to make sure that you add on there, because those searches get a lot of volume.
Right. So do you need to put any sort of what I call geographical information in? So information that's not relevant to electricians, but it's things relating to the place itself.
Yeah, I see SEOs overdo this though. So I think, you know, listing a road name, like saying we're on this street, da, 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 that's cool. Or even driving directions, that's, I guess, okay. I haven't really seen any data that shows me adding that onto a page like helps performance in any way. But definitely adding things like neighborhood names or zip codes and stuff like that can help. So I think it's good to make sure you have that.
I mean, one of the things I've been asked thousands of times over the years is, okay, we are located in this town, but we want you to drive traffic from, say, a 50-mile radius. So we want to get ranked for all these other towns that we're not located in that's nearby. And like what strategy or what conversation would you say to that?
Yeah, so I mean, it's always tricky because organically you can do it through content, right? Like you can create targeted content, we call them service area pages, for those other towns. And depending on how big they are, those usually work. I find usually service area pages are more effective for smaller suburbs, right? Like if you're creating a service area page for Chicago, it's probably not going to rank well. But I would say as far as the local pack is concerned, that's where it becomes more of a problem because your physical location matters a lot, like one of the most important things for ranking in that section. So if you want to rank 50 miles away, you're probably not going to. It's very unlikely unless there's like nobody in your industry. And so to do that, you would need to actually get more locations. So I've actually had clients do this. Like I had a handyman client that literally would open offices in towns that he wanted to do jobs in just so that he could get a listing, start getting business there. But he did open an office there, right? So he kept it all legit.
Right. So obviously that's going to one extreme about opening offices in these locations. Now, you're probably aware as well as me that there's a trend of businesses using virtual office addresses and a virtual office phone number in each location. Now, what's your thoughts around that strategy?
So Google can automatically detect those pretty well now. Like I've seen people get really sneaky with it. And I've even seen people using like self-storage spaces now. That's like a new trend. But the majority of like, you know, Regis offices or things like that, like get automatically suspended when you use them because Google automatically detects them. Same with like PO boxes. They're against guidelines. So no business is allowed to use that. The only exception would be like, I know some of these places do actually have staffed office space. So like, you know, if you rent from Regis, you can actually rent a specific room inside their giant suite that would have signage that you would be able to have your staff at. Technically that would qualify, but you definitely are risking, like you need to have sufficient proof that you actually have an office there to avoid your listing getting removed.
So say for instance, you do actually have a physical office in one of these Regis places, virtual office places, but it's a physical office, then if you create the profile and Google suspends it, then is it just sending proof or photos or whatever that you're physically there?
Yeah, I would suggest getting the photos and videos on that listing, like when you set it up so that there's no issue. You're not scrambling later. We always tell people this because I've seen people scramble, you know, their listings get suspended and then they're like running around trying to take photos and videos. If you're, you know, want to play it really safe, you can also get a Google photographer to come out. That gets uploaded to the listing as like a street view. So that's there permanently, which is always a good idea if you're kind of thinking that it's going to be an issue.
Right. So I've come across situations where two businesses have merged together. Right. Now, in those circumstances, what do you need to do? So two businesses have merged together and created a new brand rather than that business has just merged into that brand. So two businesses merged together, created a new brand, and in obviously there's two different profiles. But they're both going to have the same telephone number and address now.
Yeah, so that's tricky. It depends on a lot of things. So let's say, for example, like if the one brand is going away, then you'd need to have one profile, right? Like if you've got brand A and B and they merge into this new brand C and now brand C is the only one that's there, then obviously, you can only have one listing. As far as how Google treats it, they will not generally move or merge listings with different names. So, you know, if you've got Bob Plummer and you've got Jim Plummer and you're trying to tell Google these are the same business now and they've got different names, different websites, usually Google will not merge them together because these are different. So it depends on like that. I know in some cases when acquisitions happen, the acquiring brand will actually like change the old brand to them, right? It's now under their name. And in that case, absolutely, you just update the listing. You now own that listing. It's much simpler. Usually Google would say, you know, mark the listing as closed kind of thing. But if you really want to keep the reviews, you have to rebrand that listing as yours. Like you have to make it your listing with your company name on it. You can't ask Google to merge it because they won't.
Right. So what if say you're an SEO company, local SEO company, and you've got a new client, and there's been a history of them moving agencies, and each agency has set a new profile up, and you found there's all these different profiles that you can't get access to. I mean, you must come across that yourself. It's what do you do in that circumstance? Because obviously, Google states you can only have one profile per brand.
Yeah, so we run into that all the time. Usually in cases like that, we need to get access to all of them first. So that's kind of step one. Once you have access to them, it's tricky when the addresses aren't the same. That's when it becomes kind of a problem. But Google has two different processes for this type of thing. So they can either mark the listing as move, or they can actually do a merge. And I think of a move as like a 301 redirect. It's like, you know, when you have two domains and you redirect one to another, that's pretty much what a move does. Whereas a merge, they're actually shoving the two things into one unit. And they don't usually do merges unless the address is the same. So depending on which scenario you fall into, getting access to the profile is step one. And then the second step would be you'd have to reach out to Google Business Profile Support and have them either mark one as moved or merged, depending on if the addresses match.
Right. What would you say in local SEO is the most important thing?
I say it's a toss-up between your website and reviews. Reviews are like, I mean, you can have the best website in the world, best optimized site in the world, but if your reputation sucks, you're going to have a really hard time converting people. So we've definitely run into businesses in that boat where, you know, they just get negative reviews, and you can just tell the business hasn't really addressed the problem. Like, people leave reviews because they have a problem with the way you're doing something. And if you don't address that as a business owner, it's going to be tough. Like, I've seen businesses that we've worked with and their average rating is going down over the years. That's concerning because we can do the best SEO job in the world and their leads might start declining because their reputation is less than it was, you know, 3 years ago. So even if they're getting more traffic, they might get less conversions. So I say it's a toss up between those two things. It's hard to say which one's better than the other because they're both needed.
Yeah. So going on to the subject of reviews, what obviously 5 stars is the ultimate, but from a consensus, what sort of the minimum stars where people stop believing and trusting the brand?
I believe they say 4.2 to 4.5 is the ideal. So I think below 4 is likely where it starts to decline. And there are studies on this. So there's some good data studies out there that show, you know, what average rating you want and stuff. But actually, it's interesting to see that like 5 isn't actually the ideal. At 5-star average, people start to mistrust your reviews because they seem too good to be true. So having a less than perfect average is actually a good thing.
So for an electrician, they need to blow something up now and again.
Pretty much, yeah. Maybe not blowing stuff up, but yeah. You know, it's okay. I don't tell people to go out of their way to try and get negative reviews, but like the big thing I see is people just freak out and they want every negative review removed. And I'm like, you guys need to like get into reality a bit here, because every business, even the best ones, will get some stupid, unreasonable customer that's, you know, not happy with whatever it is that you did. People don't agree on things and expectations aren't always the same. So it's going to happen.
Yeah, I mean, when it comes to negative reviews, obviously you can tell the ones that's been done maliciously that are not clients, that's not customers, that's just done just to bring your business down. In those circumstances, is it easy to get those fake reviews removed?
Not usually. Google's guidelines are pretty, they leave a lot of room for people to do malicious things. So for example, if it was just one review and it was just like, this person's just blasting you, but they don't really give any details about who they are, you're not likely to get that removed. If you got like 15 or 20 in a row, all at the same time, that's usually a detectable pattern that, you know, Google would remove them. But there's a lot of non-legitimate reviews that stay live all the time. It's frustrating, but Google doesn't have enough proof to remove them.
Right. So the sort of negative context reviews, but they are a genuine customer. How should businesses reply to those kind of reviews? What things should they be saying within the reply of the review?
For the negative ones?
Yes.
So Mike Blumenthal wrote an article like back in 2010, I think, on this that I still reference and link to all the time. And it's like something, title of the article, something around the line of like your reviews are really for your, you know, potential new customers, and review replies are, yeah, going to be seen by the pissed off person that left you the review. But really what you should be thinking about is your future customers that are going to see that reply and how you handled yourself. And I've seen some businesses reply in reviews that make me just not want to use that business. So I'm like, wow, that owner can't own up to anything. Like they can't admit when they were wrong. And they're just like, you know, being really defensive. So the general rules are like, you got to own the problem. Don't be defensive. Don't try and tell your side of the story. Nobody wants to hear it. Like it's not the place to do that. So definitely like, even if you didn't do anything wrong, if you sound apologetic and it looks like you actually are trying to figure out how to make that person happy, that will usually be the best possible scenario. Not something like, I'm telling my lawyers about this and they're going to sue you, which I've seen a lot of people do.
Yeah, I've seen a lot of that myself. And so, I mean, a lot of conversation I have from businesses said, well, we've tried to get people to post a review. We've tried postcards. We've tried asking them, but we just can't get them to post a good review for us. What sort of things can they be doing to entice, well, not entice, that's the wrong word, but to get their happy customers to post nice things about them?
So one strategy I've seen that seems to work well is you're not supposed to incentivize customers. I know there's laws against that, and it's also against Google's guidelines, but you can incentivize your staff. So I've had people, like we went to an escape room with my team in Denver, and I remember the staff literally telling me, if you leave this nice review, I get a bonus. And like people feel a lot more like empathy for just an employee, just like somebody that's working there. I know they're probably like minimum wage or whatever. And they get this bonus because I left a review. Like, oh, that's nice. Like, I feel like I, you know, would care a lot more than like the owner. Like people don't generally care about the owners of companies. So that strategy seems to work really well. Cause I remember I took their card. They gave me a little card and it said, you know, if you mention my name in the review, I get a bonus. And like, I almost forgot, but it fell out of my backpack and I went and did it. And I know like from looking at clients, we had a client that was doing this. They were incentivizing staff to get reviews. And the moment they stopped doing that, their review volume just flatlined. Like it went to almost none. And I asked him, I'm like, what did you change? Like you guys were like this, like growing. And then all of a sudden, boom. And he's like, oh, I should probably start incentivizing my staff again. I'm like, yeah, start that back up. Because the staff are the ones that are talking to the customers day in and day out, not you as the business owner. And they're going to be the best person to get that job done.
So what about other review platforms, not just Google? So say, for instance, if a customer said, well, I don't have a Google account. So where should you be sending them to post a review?
Yeah, I mean, you could ask them what they use then. Like if they don't have an Android device, then they likely have an iPhone. So then ask them to leave one on Apple Maps. It's not probably as beneficial yet because the traffic there isn't as high. But I mean, it's pretty unlikely you'll find a person without a phone. So if they have an Android, Google, if you know they have an iPhone and they don't have a Google account, you could say Apple or Facebook. Or depending on the industry, there are some other sites that are beneficial as well.
So you mentioned Facebook there. How important are reviews on Facebook? Is there a direct link between the trust and brand awareness and the local SEO from reviews from social?
Yeah, Facebook usually makes my list mainly because it usually ranks. So it normally ranks for a branded term. I find for most businesses, your Facebook page will be in like the top 5 results when people search your business name. And that's important because the Facebook pages also get gold stars. They have Schema on their site, so they get gold stars in the search results. So if you have like a one-star rating on Facebook, somebody does a search for your business name, they will see that one star like in yellow in Google search results. Not really what you want. So I think it's important to pay attention to Facebook. Yelp is similar. Yelp also shows up usually in the top five, but they have such strict policies on reviews. I don't usually suggest asking for reviews on Yelp because it's actually against Yelp's guidelines to ask for a review, which is ridiculous in my opinion, but it is what it is.
Right. So in the local SEO space, what tools are there to do research, but in a local space, which I found very difficult?
Yeah, so it depends on what type of tool. Like there's ranking tools, there's like keyword research tools. Like what were you thinking more?
Yeah, like the researching, understanding the audience of that geographical area. How big is the audience in that area?
Okay, or just like seeing who ranks in that area, or you're seeing more like the population?
Yeah, not local ranking tools, more about the size of the audience within that area for, say, a given keyword.
Mm. Yeah, so keyword research, we usually use the Chrome extension Keywords Everywhere. And Keywords Everywhere, the tool, it's not going to give you a local search volume. Like that's unfortunately not something that any tool can give you. Like if you type in chiropractor, for example, it will give you the search volume for chiropractor anywhere. So you would have to look up like chiropractor Toronto or chiropractor Chicago or whatever to get this specific volume for that keyword. But you can't get the exact number for chiropractor searched from Toronto. The best place that you can get that information usually is Search Console or Google Business Profile Insights. So we normally start by looking there just to see what keywords they're already getting impressions for. How well do they rank? You know, which ones are they ranking? Like if they're in the local pack results, which ones are fourth or fifth? They're really close to being in the top three. Or which ones are in the organic section, like position 2 to 9? So we call those striking distance. And Google Business Profile Insights will give you a very different keyword list than Search Console will. So it's imperative that you check both. But that's usually my starting point, unless it's like something they don't even rank for at all, like you're creating new content. That's when I would pull out the Keywords Everywhere tool.
Right. So in your experience, do people search for their local florist using a local entity? So do they actually use the word search using the word town, the town word location, or is it just they search generically in that from the area?
Yeah, it's a mixture of both. So usually, like if you were to compare locksmith versus locksmith Chicago, locksmith would get more search volume by far, but you are limited for how far of a radius that you can rank for that term. Like those terms on Google Maps, proximity, which is the ranking factor that says how close are you to the person searching, that's way higher for a what we call implicit search. So like locksmith, a search without any specific geographic area specified, but a search that Google says you're looking for somebody local. So your ability to rank in a wide radius for like the term locksmith is really small. It's marginal. If you were to look at like locksmith Chicago, for example, we call those explicit terms. The search volume's less, but you can rank in a way wider area. The proximity dial is not turned up as high. So we sometimes will see like cases where locksmith Chicago is getting that particular business more volume than just locksmith, even though technically locksmith is searched more. It's just your ability to rank in a radius. I think this is like the key to the puzzle that we know as local SEO is figuring out like what is possible and what you should spend your time and effort on.
Right. Now, the next question is a scenario you've probably come across many times where you've got a new client, a new local business, but it's a service-based business locally, but they work from home and don't want the home address to be published anywhere. What What's the conversation look like, and what steps do you take for those businesses?
Yeah, we have a lot of those. I mean, like my agency, we don't have an office. We're all remote. So I use my home address and it's hidden on our listing. So Google has done a really good job at making sure like your address is hidden. So even if you verify your listing using your home address, you can hide it. It's not going to show to the public. So you're fine there. Where I think sometimes it can get tricky is like some other sites don't necessarily have that policy. So you kind of have to pick and choose what sites you're willing to be listed on based on that. But there is a long list of sites that allow you to hide your address now. Like a lot of the bigger, more reputable sites, the ones you should really care about, they understand that there's a lot of work from home type businesses. So they have the ability for you to hide your address. There are some that don't. So like Apple Maps, for example, no option. So if you want to get listed on Apple Maps and you're at your home, you have to list your home. Otherwise, you can't get listed. So kind of sucks in scenarios like that. Which is why, again, I would say, like, if you get to a certain size and you want to grow, maybe get an office, because then you won't have those limitations.
Yes. So if you say you're not using an address or displaying an address on your website, is it a lot harder to get ranked if you're not displaying an address for that local area?
I don't believe so. You can still list your city name and your zip code and all that stuff, like all in your footer, your titles, your content, all that stuff. Like, so I don't think you're limited there by not having an address. And I haven't seen any data that would say that like you'd rank better. I do know that like with local pack rankings, there is a difference between having an address showing and not showing. Like there's pros and cons to both. So there is a difference. Most of the time I would say, like if I look at all the factors and all the pros and all the cons, if there is more of a pro to showing your address. And I'd say the biggest thing, like the biggest reason why you'd want to show your address is you can't run local ads without that. So if you're doing ads on Google, there's things called location extensions, and they can get you ads in the local pack. You may have seen those. You can't get those if you don't have an address showing. So without a PIN, those ads don't work. So that's, I think, a really big limiter to having a service area business, which is, say, more of a reason why you'd want to have a PIN.
So, right. Moving on to whether it's a brand entity, whatever you want to call it. So how can the smaller businesses compete in their local town, city, when all the local searches are dominated by the big national brands with a very big profile?
I mean, honestly, I see usually the opposite. Like, it's funny, some of the big brands really don't show up well because they just don't even devote any time or effort to SEO. Like, there's a lot of major big brands that SEO is terrible. Like, they don't even have location pages. Like, they have those little like dinky locator pages on their site where you like type in your city and it just pins the address on the map. And that store doesn't even have a location page. So there's still a lot of big brands that do a really tough job, really horrible job at that. If that's not the case and you're running up against a brand that's got a huge budget, it is tough. So we see this with personal injury lawyers, right? So I wouldn't say they're big brands per se, but there are some big firms that have like, let's say they employ 100 people and they've literally got, $30,000 to $40,000 a month they're spending on SEO. If you're a little guy with a one lawyer firm that is, trying to compete, you're going to have maybe 20 reviews when they have like 2,000, and you're going to have, less time and effort to devote to content. So if that's the scenario, then I would say it's imperative that you find stuff that they're not doing, topics they're not talking about. Don't go for these, don't try and target the same exact keywords that every single person is targeting, which is often where I see people going wrong. They're like, oh, I want to rank for car accident lawyer Chicago, but I'm only willing to spend, $1,000 a month, and I've got this small website and I have 15 reviews. Like, and it's like, you're just not going to. Like, you've got to pick a different target. There's a lot of keywords out there, lots that get volume that none of these big places are targeting. That's what you should be working on. It's not always easy to convince people of that, though.
So how can these businesses and SEOs working in this local space, how can they go about researching what those local hidden opportunities are?
It's tough. I always start again with Search Console. Look to see where you're already ranking. Look to see where there's opportunities. And then, you know, if you don't find any that way, that's when you need to really start diving into like competitor sites, like throwing them through Ahrefs, finding neglected pages, pages that they haven't updated in a very long time that are like, shouldn't even be ranking. There's always opportunities there. And that's usually the best way to go about it. I would avoid, you know, just thinking, what should I write about? And like coming up with just ideas based on, you know, what you think people will search. I have clients that do that and those pages do not perform well. So I think basing it off of like, you know, Ahrefs would be my tool of choice probably to dive into other websites. But I think this is where agencies can really add value, because if it's an industry, for example, that we've worked in a lot, we already know what those opportunities are. We already know what those topics are because we've got, you know, six or seven other clients in that same industry in other geographic areas. And we're like, ooh, we already know that this topic does well and this topic does horribly. So I think that's where it can be really a good advantage anyways to be working with somebody that's got some experience in your industry.
Right. So on the back to the business profile, how important are images?
It varies based on the industry, right? So if you're a restaurant, they're very important, right? They're super, super important. If you're a lawyer, not as much, right? Like there's not a lot of things that you can necessarily tell through imagery. So I'd say it really depends on what industry you're in. If you're a jeweler and you don't have photos, like good luck. Like you're not going to compete at all without photos as a jeweler. So it's one of those things that's not equally weighted across every industry.
Right. So with things like Google Vision AI, and they say that, you know, the photo has to relate to what you do, is what about these random photos posted from external sources that if somebody was to look at it, it wouldn't represent your business any way, shape, or form?
Yeah, Mike Blumenthal talks about this topic a lot. He loves images, seems to be like his new favorite thing to talk about. And I think he makes a point that says, you know, you need to have your own quality images so that Google will prefer those over the crappy ones your customers upload, which is 100% true. Like, let's say you are a restaurant and you've got a really awesome high quality photo of, you know, a plate that you serve. That's likely going to take preference to Google. Google does want quality photos. They know, they can tell if something's blurry or distorted, and they will prefer ones that are better. So having those photos to begin with will lessen the odds that, you know, that crappy customer one will show up high or like in your knowledge panel when somebody searches for your business. You can't usually get rid of low quality photos. Google will only remove them if they're like for the wrong place or, you know, include like private information or something like that.
So how can somebody determine which photo gets shown as the main image in your profile?
Yeah, so Google doesn't let you pick. I mean, well, they do, but then they don't always pick what you put in there. So like you could say, I want this as my cover photo, and they'll just ignore it. There's a few things that you should avoid. So don't put a lot of text in the photo. That's a good way to get Google to just ignore what you said is your cover. They call it a cover photo. So that's one thing. Another thing is Google tends to prefer outside imagery. So for example, if you're a law firm, they would prefer to see the outside building, like showing where your firm is from street view, over a picture of your staff. So Google's, I think, likes images of the actual place because it helps users on Google Maps like, oh, there's that business. They're over there because they can easily see where the business is located in the photo. So that's the number one thing that Google looks for.
Right. Now, moving on to structured data, you've got the local business structured data, but what other things should you be including in the structured data rather than just the standard information within the local business?
So we don't even really use local business schema. I have not seen a compelling reason to use it. It doesn't seem to impact ranking. We've done lots of testing on that. Other people have also tested that. And it doesn't change how you show up visually in the search results. So usually when we're adding schema, if it's a schema type that changes how you show up on Google, like it adds gold stars or it adds some type of featured thing, like an image or a video, then I think it's worth adding. but schema in general doesn't impact ranking of this type of schema we're talking about. And there's a lot of types, so I don't want to say that uniformly, but it's one of those things that I don't think it's worth spending time on unless it's going to do something visual.
Right. That's interesting you say that it doesn't impact local SEO at all.
We haven't found it. It does. I know Brian Dean did a big study, like a much bigger study. We do case studies. So we're like, we'll try it on like in an isolated environment and see what happens. So I've done a lot of those, but he'll do like big data studies. And he had a study on local, or not local, but SEO ranking factors in general. And schema was one of the things that he said he didn't find had any impact. And I think he analyzed like a million something results. So his was a much larger data set.
Now, moving on to a subject that's, I'd say, probably a minefield for most local SEO people, onto local-based link building. Right. Now, what sort of mindset, what sort of things should you be thinking about for when you're building links for a local business as opposed to a national brand?
Yeah, so I think some local directory sites are still important. I say some, a very small handful. So usually whatever shows up for like a branded search, right? When you do a branded search and you scan through the first page of Google, whoever shows up there, like whatever sites those are important. And you could do that same search for three or four of your competitors and just look like, where are they listed? I'm not, you know, it's pretty simple. But where I think people go overkill is like, you know, oh, you need 50 citations, you need 100 citations, or let me get you list. Like, it's always these numbers that people throw out. And there's sites that like do not matter. Like there's sites that get no traffic, that are pretty much abandoned, that I've forgotten even exist, that, you know, we heard about in the early days of local SEO, like Hot Frog or like Brown Book or like sites like that. Like they're not important and they're not going to help you achieve your goal of ranking higher on Google. So we spend more time on link building for clients that are like getting a lot of organic traffic, because link building has more of an impact on the organic algorithm than it does the local algorithm. So if you're trying to rank higher in the local pack results, link building is not the way to do that. But if you're trying to rank higher organically, getting links is definitely a way to do that. But I can't say enough, like it is not a numbers thing. We've seen one link be worth more than 50. Like it's not like, oh, 50 links is better than one. No, it's like getting a link from an authoritative relevant site could be worth the same amount as 100 or 50 really crappy low quality links.
So I've heard in the local SEO space, when it comes to link building, it doesn't matter if the other website, the other business is not in the same industry, as long as it's located in the same town. Is that correct?
I honestly don't know. We haven't tested on in isolation. It's really hard to say. I have seen, however, contextually relevant links carry more weight. So if it's similar, a similar industry, similar topic, then it's better. I think the domain name is coming from things like that. Again, there's a lot of people that have done tests on this in general. So I think I would defer to some of those like published studies. What we've found mainly is like the type of link that you get matters for sure. Like guest posts, for example, are pretty much trash at getting you anywhere. Like we've tested, I actually bought a bunch of guest posts, you know, from those sellers that sell them for like, you know, $150 a link and things like that. And it did nothing to move rankings for this business we were testing it on. So there are certain types of links that I think are just completely useless and not worth paying for at all.
So when it comes to local SEO, when you've sorted out the citation stuff, should you actually think and focus on link building at all for a local business? Or is the content more valuable than focusing on links for local SEO?
Yeah, again, depending on the industry and if they need organic traffic, because links are really more for organic. But The two types that we do quite a bit of here that we found are still effective is earned media. So like, you know, using services like Haro and things like that, where journalists are trying to interview people, those are often very relevant. So like we've gotten realtors, for example, links from like real estate websites or realtor.com and like really, really good links. And those are 100% worthwhile. So the other category that we get a lot of is memberships and things like that. So like if you're a personal injury lawyer, you know, like getting a link from a bike association league or like a motorcycle league, because they deal with a lot of cases to do with like motorcycle accidents. Those are contextually relevant, or, you know, the local little league team, or like, you know, the local YMCA or some like charity that's local. That's often another way that you can get links. Again, like you need a budget for them, because those ones are generally not free. They come with membership fees.
Right. So you're doing a lot of work on the website itself, and the website itself is ranking organically very well. Does that directly impact the rankings of the business profile in Maps?
Link building, not as much, like very little. It would more impact the organic ranking of that website instead.
Right. Okay. So say a business has limited resources, limited time. Would you suggest they focus on the local SEO on the website or the business profile?
Yeah, I would. Link building, I think, is, again, it's needed in some industries. Like, we have a real estate agent, and like if they're going to show up anywhere competing with like realtor.com and Zillow and stuff like that, and like a lot of the terms they want to rank for don't even show local pack results, they have to get links. Like there's no option. But there are some industries, for example, like electricians, where I would say like you don't necessarily need like a massive link building budget, because most electricians don't have lots of links anyways. Like who you're competing with is not, you know, people that have tons and tons of links pointing to their site. So in order to compete or even outrank them, you need to, you know, likely look to be a little better than they are. But I've also seen listings rank in the local pack results that don't have hardly any links. So those two algorithms work very differently. And like links do not have much of an impact on the local pack results.
So for the local pack results, what should businesses and SEOs be focusing on for the local pack results?
Yeah, so content is big. Like, you know, like those long tail keywords are killer, right? Like there's usually lots of different ways, like I gave for that example of the electrician, lots of different ways people phrase things. You need pages for all those different things if they're different topics. So focusing more on content and then keeping your existing pages fresh. Like there's new things that come out, new features that come out at Google. There's always ways that you can improve your content. You know, if it's a service area page, like updating it with recent photos and jobs you've done, data, like with, you know, lawyers talking about examples of cases that you've won, things like that. Like there's always stuff that you can update your site with. And that's usually where your money's best spent.
Right. Well, we couldn't not talk about what everyone's talking about, which is AI. But AI and now Bard, and will AI impact the local SEO space?
There are certain spaces I would be worried about AI. I don't think local is one of them. So I think that local SEO is like when people are searching for a business that they want to pay money to and hire, they need to know a lot of information about that business to make a decision. And I don't think that AI is going to give that to them. AI is not going to give them a list of reviews where they can see who reviewed the business and read them. AI is not going to give them a list of photos of that place. Like there's a lot of really rich things that Google's kind of incorporated into the business profiles that you need as a consumer to make a decision. So I'm not super worried about AI yet. I mean, I don't know where it's headed, but I think it's going to take over a lot of like instant answers and things like that. You know, like what's the weather today, or, you know, how long is this trail near my, you know, how many miles is it? That type of stuff, which isn't generally the types of queries that convert or send business for local SEO anyways. So it's not something I'm super worried about at this point.
Right. Now, location. Now, the actual physical location of the building you're in, if the closer you are to the center of the city or town you you're targeting, is that a ranking factor?
Used to be. It still matters for explicit terms. So like, you know, Plumber Chicago, being closer to the city center of Chicago is definitely helpful for that. It doesn't help you rank for other terms, though. So we definitely do see that it still holds some weight when it comes to terms including that city, though. Just kind of interesting, because I feel like it's gone up and down over the years. There was a time where I would have told you it didn't matter at all. But based on recent stuff I've been analyzing, I think it does still make an impact. And if you're not in the city borders, then you're screwed. You can't rank for city terms if you're not inside that city's border.
Right. So if you are not physically located in the space and the area you want to rank for, basically, don't try. Is that the...
Unless it's really small. Like I said, big exception here is small towns, because small towns don't have much competition and lots of things are possible. But like, yeah, again, like using a big city as an example, if you're like outside of Chicago and you want to rank in Chicago, in the local pack results, you need an office in Chicago.
Yeah. Okay. Now, moving on to conferences. I mean, do you run your own local SEO event?
Yeah. So Local U, we're going to be doing 2 events this year, both in person. We're kind of excited to get back to in-person events. So the first one is going to be in Dallas in April. We haven't announced the second one yet, but I can tease people the location. It's going to be in Toronto in the fall. I've been wanting to do one in Toronto because that's where I'm from for a very long time. And we had one planned and then COVID happened. So that killed the plan for that event. So we're kind of 3 years later, now attempted to have it again. We talk all about local. So it's all specific to local SEO. Sometimes we have some ad sessions and things like that, but all specific to like local businesses.
So for the like book titles and topics, I mean, is local SEO that vast that there's lots of different areas of local SEO?
Yeah, like so our Dallas event, like I think our agenda is launching today, we have topics on like content, we have speakers talking about reputation, we have somebody talking about links, we have a whole session on AI and how that's going to play into things. There's always like a pretty vast wide variety of topics, and we also require all of our speakers to use unique stuff, so it can't be something they presented at like another conference. So it's always going to be new information. I've definitely seen some sneak peeks at some of my colleagues' topics that they're talking on, and it's going to be good.
Yeah. How do you see the conference space evolving over time?
I mean, honestly, so my experience from the last 2 years, it's slower. Like it's definitely harder to get people to come compared to, you know, pre-pandemic. So it's not back to normal yet. And I can say that from attending a few conferences last year. There's not even a lot that are happening. Like I remember before I was like booked up, I was turning down speaking opportunities because I had too many. So there was a lot of conferences happening and we are not back to that point yet. So I'm not sure why that is, but I'm hoping that trend will change, because I think there's so much value in meeting people and being able to bounce questions off of people in person that you just can't do with virtual events.
So you mentioned that you do quite a few speaking gigs. Now, what sort of things do the event organizers want you to speak about? Obviously, it's local SEO orientated, but is there a key theme around the actual subtopic?
There has been historically. I'm trying to change that. So I feel like I talk about Google's business profile stuff a lot, but I'm trying to shift that more towards just talking about like the algorithm, how it works, how to rank, things like that. The topic that I'll be talking about at Local U in Toronto actually is link building. I'm going to be talking about a whole bunch of tests that we did. So some of the stuff I was like kind of alluding to, you know, why I think that links don't impact local rankings. I'll show you how I concluded that, like go through all of the specifics of like what we tried, how we isolated it, what we found, that kind of thing. But I think anything under the local SEO umbrella, I'm usually happy to speak on.
Right. Is there anything around streamlining? The reason I'm asking is because myself and my team have to manage over 300 individual locations, and there's just 3 of us.
Yeah, that's a topic that I probably wouldn't talk about. I feel like that's more like Noah Lerner. He's big on like, you know, automation and how to streamline things, or Crystal Tang is another one that's like really good at like talking about how to manage lots of listings at scale, because that's what they do at Uberall. So I would say like those two are probably more experts on that particular topic than I would be. I'm not the automation queen, but I like to really focus on things. Like, that's what I do. I dig in. I look at like screenshots. I pore over search results. I'm the person that loves to look at case studies and things like that. Not necessarily the person that wants to like have a high level view of 500 locations.
Okay. Now, is it all about Google? What about Bing Local?
I mean, I signed up for the new Bing yesterday, so I'm on the wait list, but like, I don't know. Bing has been around for so long. They have not come anywhere close to cracking Google's monopoly. Like, I mean, like they are a fraction of the traffic when we look at client sites. Like, it's so small, it's not even worth investing time in. So at this point, no, but who knows? Like, maybe that'll change with them buying or integrating ChatGPT. Like, I have no idea. Like, but they've been trying for a very long time and not succeeding.
Yeah. So, oh dear, I feel as though we've covered so much over the past hour. Now, what's the one thing that excites you personally about local SEO?
I love that it's always changing. Like, I think it's really fun that I am still, you know, however many years I'm in this now, 16, 17, I've lost track, but however many years I've been doing this, I'm still learning stuff. Like, I constantly learning more about how to get clients to rank, how to find good opportunities, things that are like kind of leveling up our skill set. I get excited to continue to learn. So it doesn't get boring. I feel like if I was in a job where it was the same thing every day, all the time, and nothing new to kind of figure out, I'd probably get bored, because I like solving puzzles and like dealing with strategy and things like that. So it's a really good place to work if you like that kind of stuff.
Brilliant. Now, you've joined us today freely in your own time. Now, is there anything that the audience watching this can do to help you?
Come to our local event. That'll be the big thing that I'll plug, because it's coming up in April and it's going to be awesome. Like, I really love those events. It is so much fun to meet people that you know, interact with online on Twitter and stuff like that. And it's going to be a really great event. So I'd say there, if you have questions or, you know, want to hit me up on Twitter. I'm pretty active on Twitter. We also have the local search forum as well. If you have just general questions about local SEO, that's a free forum. You can join and post all your questions there.
Right. And a big question to end us on: if you had a magic wand and you could change something within local SEO overnight, what would it be?
Oh, that's interesting. I would probably say give service area businesses a way to adjust where they rank so it's not based on their physical location, but like limit the options. You know what I mean? Like, don't say like, oh yeah, based on your service areas, because you could just spam that and add a whole bunch. Like, maybe let them select one that would replace their home location or PIN. I feel like that would just be wonderful. I'm not sure how I'd do it as an engineer, but it would be great if there was an option.
Fantastic. Well, many, many thanks for joining us today. And I'm sure the audience, as well as me, have received massive value out of this. And what's the future hold for you?
Yeah, I mean, we are growing as a team. So my company, it's exciting to kind of see the team grow and stuff. So, you know, we're just trying to continue to be just good at what we do and learn more about SEO and always kind of learn things that people don't know. That's always my goal. Like, what can we learn that is not, you know, generally known in the SEO community, and just keep plugging away at that. We publish a lot of stuff. So our blog is covered with stuff, and we're also doing videos now. So our YouTube channel has 3 videos coming out every week currently. So that's another place to watch for us.
And the final thing, what would your one golden nugget takeaway be for people?
Ooh, one thing. I would probably pay attention to video more. That's something that is a trend that I'm kind of noticing that we are pushing really big with clients. I know we didn't really talk about it today, but just trying to add videos to every page on your site that drives leads. a video about that topic so that if people don't want to read, that they can actually digest that information some other way. I think it's a huge opportunity that most small businesses have not even tapped into. So that would be my tip.
Fantastic. Well, thank you for joining us today. And I wish you every success in the future.
All right. Thank you, Mark.
Thank you. You've been listening to the Unscripted SEO Interview Podcast with me, Mark A. Preston. Join us next time as I interview more top SEO professionals.